Hub
and Spoke
Audio Collective.
From Quiet Juice and the Linguistic Society of America, this is Subtitle, stories about languages and the people who speak them. Have you ever been somewhere where people are speaking a language that you don't understand, but you can make out a word or two here and there because that language has borrowed words from English? And then you ask about the word, well, I do anyway, why it's there, why they're using it. Don't you have a word for that in your language? And they say, yeah, of course we do. And we use it. But when we use the English word, it conveys something just slightly different. Different in meaning, maybe, or in the associations or images that it may conjure up. So it's useful to have the English word too. Today, the story of one such word.
The English word black.
And why so many French people use it. This, by the way, is Emma Jacobs, who used to live in France.
To give you a sense of how it's used, I went to ask around at a small film festival called Le Black Movie Summer.
Black is a word that many French people now use commonly, you know. It's just like, it's so common.
Link Berthemieux is a dancer.
I think it's about culture. It's a lot about music. But most of the time, it's just a trendy way to say noir, in fact.
Black, ça fait référence au noir.
A trendy way to say noir, with associations with African-American music and culture, agrees Katia Turin, but also...
Un peu mieux perçu que le mot noir.
Black, she thinks, can be a bit better perceived than the word noir. She describes it as less in your face or less direct. I tend to think of this as sort of like putting the word in quotes when you use the English, like, okay, it's a kind of faulty, artificial racial category, but, you know, black.
So it's like you're not really owning the word fully, the word black. You're recognizing that it's not a perfect description of what you're trying to say. Is that it?
Yeah, essentially, or just acknowledging it's something you might experience as being perceived as black, but sort of questioning it at the same time. I'll actually let Jean Beeman explain this a little more. She's a sociology professor at Purdue who studies France and specifically ethnicity and upward mobility among descendants of North African immigrants. And in the course of a lot of fieldwork, she's heard a lot of people who she thinks they're avoiding using a term that identifies a person's race in conversation.
To say I'm African-American, it would be considered impolite. You would just instead say she's an American woman.
Pointing out differences between people in France, that is not polite. So it struck Beeman all the more when she started interviews for her research back in 2008 to hear people use the word black.
That's when I first started hearing it, and I remember directly asking my respondents, well, why use this term and not use noir? And like, in other words, why use the word, the English word black and not the French word for black? And it was just, and people just explained it very matter-of-factly of like, oh, well, it's considered very rude to use noir. It's, you know, but you, so black is much more acceptable.
Wait a minute. I feel like I got it and now I don't get it anymore. Like, how did this word get into the vocabulary in the first place?
So actually, first, there's some history that helps explain why the French don't like using certain words that to Americans might seem fairly neutral. We're talking about racial classifications that were made by French society in the past, and these enabled really ugly things.
The French social sciences were based on the existence of races at a time when the colonial empire was thriving.
This is Pape Ndiaye, a historian at Sciences Po, a university in Paris. There's a ton of racial ideology used to justify and organize the French colonies in sub-Saharan Africa, North Africa, and parts of Asia. And then during World War II, the Nazis and the Vichy collaborationists collected ethnic information and, of course, used it to deport people to concentration camps.
After the end of the war, the decolonization period, the French believed that we all had entered a new period during which we live in a colorblind society, that skin color or racial differences do not matter or do not exist.
So there are these idealistic good motives that become an early source of the skittishness around differentiating people, which shows up today in all sorts of ways. The French government today does not have any line on its census for race, and that's by law. Basically, for a lot of people, it's the less said about race in France, the better. But at the same time, the French have always been fascinated by racial issues in the US, where not only do we have racial statistics, but this long, long history of confrontations around race relations. And when the word black first comes to France, it's among an intellectual crowd in the 60s and 70s. They're following American news like the Black Power movement, but it's niche. The word itself doesn't get much traction. The big development that really establishes black in the French vocabulary comes much later with the arrival of American rap and hip hop. This music gets especially popular early on in poor areas surrounding Paris that are called the banlieues.
By the 80s, the banlieue regions have like a lot of, you know, you'll have North African and African populations that in some places become the majority in certain projects.
Laurent Dubois is a historian at Duke. He says rap and hip hop catch on and inspire a lot of young French artists in these areas.
The major question for a lot of young people in France has to do with basically being kind of targeted by the police, feeling, you know, in a sense, like in occupied territory in their projects and increasingly in conflict with the police. And since that's such a common theme also in American hip hop, I think that in some ways the translation moment really becomes that American hip hop is a way of talking about the experience of being a kind of minority population targeted for being black.
Franco Lolia grew up in one of those big, troubled housing projects outside Paris. We talked in a cafe in Paris where he told me that early on, the first really high-achieving black men he remembers encountering were both African-American.
Carl Lewis and ensuite Michael Jackson.
Carl Lewis, the 80s Olympic track athlete, and of course, Michael Jackson.
Ces deux personnes qui m'ont amené une vision positive.
They were the two black men who could give me a positive image of what black is supposed to represent.
The woman interpreting for Lolia is his friend Diafara Diallo. The word black, they go on to explain, took on that allure connected with black American success in sports and music. But simultaneously, Lolia said he and his friends identified more in their own personal lives with other aspects of American culture. Lolia and his friends, they also hung out in gangs of young guys from their own neighborhoods.
Multitude de choses que j'ai pas l'habitude de.
Okay, so I don't really want to say what the all the bad things that I did, but what I can say was like a confrontation with whatever was the source of authority.
But the reason Lolia brought up this period with me at all was because of the name his gang chose to go by back then.
Le Black Boy.
That was the name of his gang, the Black Boys.
Le groupe d'à côté, c'était les B-Boys.
And another group of black guys was called B-Boys.
Parce que c'était uniquement à travers ce genre de représentation-là qu'on pouvait obtenir.
But it was only through this English word black that we could find a minimum of pride.
Since then, Lolia has come to feel very differently about the use of the word black in France. We'll come back to that. But to continue our history of how this word went mainstream, back to Laurent Dubois of Duke, who I actually got in touch with because he wrote a book about soccer. It's called Soccer Empire, and it's about the wildly successful French national team that won the World Cup in 1998.
The first World Cup ever victory for France. They win at home. They win because of basically black and North African players scoring the goals, you know, Lilian Thuram in the semifinal and Zidane in the final. You know, so suddenly these these figures become, you know, massive heroes in society. And the slogan that that comes out is to describe the French team as Black Blanc Beurre.
Black Blanc Beurre is a play on the stripes of the French flag, which are bleu, blanc, rouge, or blue, white, and red. But then beurre, which is a slang term for North African, replaces red or rouge. So you have Black Blanc Beurre, which you can just make out a fan chanting to the TV cameras in the absolute chaos around the Arc de Triomphe after the 98 final.
I was never able to figure out, like, you know, who first coins it or, you know, find a journalist or something. It emerges, like, I don't know, from the culture, I guess, in a way.
But Dubois points out this is the same time as the rise of the anti-immigrant French right. The far-right leader back then, Jean-Marie Le Pen, questions whether the players know how to sing the national anthem, the Marseillaise. And so the slogan also becomes a way to express support for this exceptionally diverse team that is killing it for France on the soccer field. It also evokes this bigger, idealistic vision of France itself as the coming together of these groups.
Black Blanc Beurre. Everyone heard that slogan in France, you know, the celebrations for 1998 World Cup. You know, everybody says this is like the biggest celebration since the liberation of Paris. So because of that, I think the term black gets really sort of stuck in the imaginary as black is just a way to describe, you know, people of African descent in the society in a way that's positive.
And so it becomes this word that all kinds of people use instead of noir. Not just people of color in the banlieue, but French people of all different stripes.
It's podcast recommendation time. This week, I want to tell you about Plodding Through the Presidents, which tells lesser-known stories about some of the early presidents and founders of the United States and the people around them. And boy, are there stories. Stories galore. Thomas Jefferson's obsession with wool. The love letters of some presidents. John Quincy Adams. And the surprisingly saucy Warren G. Harding. Winston Churchill's possibly nude, probably apocryphal, White House encounter with the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. There are fabulous episodes on all these, which you're going to love, however much or little, like me, you know about America's presidents. Your hosts are Howard and Jessica Dorey. Howard's a history blogger. Jessica has a very nice line in Irreverence. They know how to tell a well-researched story, and they have great guests too. I'm working my way through the entire back catalog of Plodding Through the Presidents, and I hope it never ends. Listen and subscribe wherever you're listening to this.
Today, the hopefulness of that Black Blanc Beurre slogan, it's something people look at with nostalgia, but can also seem naive to a lot of people. Because in case you haven't noticed, France has not solved its racial tensions. The change in the 90s and 2000s was a subtle one, and everyone's not suddenly at ease talking about race or religion. This is partly because the hostile political environment that inspired that slogan has persisted and arguably hardened. French historian Pape Ndiaye says today can feel a lot like the 90s, before that unifying World Cup victory.
We also live in a political moment when the extreme right and the National Front are very strong.
The National Front, that's France's far-right party that's been gaining vote share since the mid-90s.
Issues related to identity being raised all the time, national identity, what makes us French, and so on and so forth, so that in a way, any word or distinction that may imply that French society is dividing along racial lines is often seen as suspect.
But at the same time, there are these problems that follow racial lines. Ndiaye tends to talk about these as shared experiences of heavy-handed policing, housing, and job discrimination.
In many ways, French blacks want to be visible and invisible. They want to be invisible because they don't want to be subjected to any form of discrimination. They want to be like anyone. They don't want to be singled out by the police, for example, in a train station.
But they also want to be visible. They want the issues dealt with that are to do with their being black.
So it is this kind of minority paradox, visibility and invisibility, which is at the heart of the use of the word noir, sometimes the word black.
Ndiaye isn't against the word black, but he thinks noir is just more accurate, more precisely about the French experience. He also points out its use in a positive way by historic cultural movements of French-speaking African and Caribbean intellectuals. Franco Lolia, who used to be part of the Black Boys, who is now in his mid-40s, has come to feel very strongly that he doesn't like the word black. He's now a social worker and also an anti-racism activist. He says black does conjure up American success, but it also implies that racial inequities are somehow not French.
The perverted effect of using black instead of noir is just to erase the racism in France and to pretend that racism is only an Anglophone thing, only an American thing.
So far from being academic, language, he thinks, really affects how people identify problems and how easy or difficult it is to mobilize and do something about them. And Jean Beeman, the sociologist, says another argument for finding the right language, whatever that is, to talk about what Americans would think of as racial or ethnic identities, is that more recently, France has come to overemphasize religion, Islam in particular.
Islam is just everything is coded as Islam. Every problematic threat, anything seen as a threat to French identity or French society is coded in the level of Islam. When I think people are really talking about race and ethnicity, but are, you know, of course, it's not polite or not acceptable to do so openly.
Unfortunately, she thinks that the conversation about religion has become such a big part of the news cycle and public debate. There's not a lot of energy left right now for tackling other issues. Beeman pointed out that recently, some young black activists in France have started to use the phrase Black Lives Matter. It was chanted at protests after the death of a young man in police custody. It piggybacked on the American conversation about police-involved violence that has gotten a lot of coverage in France. Maybe a help. But it also comes with American baggage. Comparing the French experience with an American situation that, at least in the area of police violence, the activists themselves believe is much, much worse. As an example, shortly after the death of the young man outside Paris, someone from his own neighborhood, he described police in the U.S. to me as shooting black men like chickens. He mimed shooting at the ground with his fingers. This is the complicated thing about taking the United States as an inspiration, linguistically or otherwise. It's simultaneously seen as this place where blacks can be very successful, but French people are also very, very aware of the problems black Americans deal with.
Talking with racial ethnic minorities, there's very much a sense of a sort of pride in what they consider the sort of American civil rights movement and the trajectory that, you know, one could say, or I guess they would say, led from, you know, Martin Luther King to Barack Obama being our first African-American president. But what's interesting is that in that, they don't want a sort of American-style identity politics. So I think there's really a wrestling in French minority communities of how do we ever, you know, see our version of a French Barack Obama, for example, without the sort of the exact same identity politics that we have in the United States.
And the question running underneath all this, still to be determined, is what vocabulary should France adopt? Whether it's black or something else or both, what are the terms going to be that best describe French, not necessarily American realities, but also challenge the French status quo?
Emma Jacobs is an audio and multimedia reporter who today is based in Montreal. She's also a fabulous illustrator. I'll post links to her work in the show notes to this episode. Since Emma reported this story in 2017, you could say a lot has changed and nothing has. After the Black Lives Matter movement went global, French soccer players took the knee. But unlike, say, the English national soccer team, the French team was divided about the gesture. And after a couple of years, they abandoned it. And the French ultra-right National Front Party is becoming ever more popular with voters. The party is polling strongly ahead of European elections this summer. The next presidential election, when they're likely to also do well, will be in 2027. Through all this, the word black in France remains popular. Alison Schau manages Subtitle's social media and writes the newsletter, which you can sign up for at subtitlepod.com/newsletter. That's subtitlepod.com/newsletter. Thanks also to everyone at the World Public Radio Program. Subtitle is a member of the Hub and Spoke Audio Collective. We're a bunch of independently minded podcasters who make episodes about the past, the future, the arts, the sciences, and, of course, linguistics. The Hub and Spoke podcasts really have great names. The Lonely Palette, Nocturne, Rumble Strip, and Print is Dead. Long live print. You can find out about those podcasts and many more at hubspokeaudio.org. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. See you in a couple of weeks.
Hub
and Spoke. Audio Collective.